Exame Final Nacional de Inglês, Prova 550, Primeira Fase. Ensino Secundário, 2020, 11º ano de escolaridade, continuação, bienal. Vai agora realizar a parte A, compreensão do oral. Escute com muita atenção e siga as instruções. Mesmo que não compreenda alguma palavra ou frase, continue a resolver a prova e mantenha-se em silêncio. A parte A é composta por 8 itens relativos a 2 textos, texto 1 e texto 2. Antes de ouvir cada texto, dispõe de alguns segundos para ler os respectivos itens. Vai ouvir cada texto 2 vezes. Enquanto estiver a ouvir, pode anotar as suas respostas no enunciado. Lembre-se de que terá de as registar posteriormente na folha de respostas. Dispõe de alguns segundos no final de cada audição para registar e verificar as suas respostas. Atenção, toda a prova será em inglês. Vire agora à página do enunciado para dar início à parte A da prova, compreensão do oral.
Text 1. You will hear 3 teenagers answering the question, "Do you think teens are concerned about the environment?" For item 1, match the names Lisa, Noah or Natasha in column A with the ideas they express in column B. All the ideas apply once. On your answer sheet, write only the names and the numbers. Now, read the ideas in column B. You have 25 seconds to read them. Now listen. Lisa.
Oh yeah, definitely. We are honestly concerned about the environment and all the ecological problems we're facing now. It's not a pretend to be interested thing, like most adults. There are lots of simple initiatives and projects involving young people that aim to fight these problems. At my school, for example, we've got an environmental group that organises campaigns to raise young people's awareness about issues like, for example, recycling and reducing waste. Last year, we wrote a leaflet with recycling tips and tricks. It was quite successful, and we're thinking about organising a second-hand fair this year. We have so many things we don't use anymore piling up in our homes. Why not swap them for things we do need? I believe these little things can have an impact on schools and on young people's lives. I think it's much more difficult to change adults' attitudes, though.
Noah.
I really think we are. Also, I believe we can contribute to educating adults and even younger children about these issues. Our generation has learnt more about ways of protecting the environment than older generations, especially because of school subjects such as science and citizenship. Talking to our family and other adults can actually help maximize our chances of changing behavior. Last year, one of my science projects was to go over to the local primary school and teach the first graders about easy, simple things they can do at home to help protect the environment. It was really cool for us and for them. Sharing views and ideas can help us find solutions. I really believe that as long as young people work together, we can really turn things around.
Natasha.
Of course we are. After all, we are the ones that will have to go on living on this planet. We care and we get involved. It's obvious that something needs to be done. I mean, the environmental problems we've been causing are not just going to vanish as if by magic, are they? Words are not enough, and we all know it. We need to start making sensible shopping choices and disposing of our waste in responsible ways. But I think the most important thing is that this generation is raising its voice to make sure everyone realizes what's happening, whether that's enough to reverse the situation or not. Well, to be honest, I don't really know.
Listen again. Lisa.
Oh yeah, definitely. We are honestly concerned about the environment and all the ecological problems we're facing now. It's not a pretend-to-be-interested thing, like most adults. There are lots of simple initiatives and projects involving young people that aim to fight these problems. At my school, for example, we've got an environmental group that organises campaigns to raise young people's awareness about issues like, for example, recycling and reducing waste. Last year, we wrote a leaflet with recycling tips and tricks. It was quite successful, and we're thinking about organising a second-hand fair this year. We have so many things we don't use anymore piling up in our homes. Why not swap them for things we do need? I believe these little things can have an impact on schools and on young people's lives. I think it's much more difficult to change adults' attitudes, though.
Noah.
I really think we are. Also, I believe we can contribute to educating adults and even younger children about these issues. Our generation has learnt more about ways of protecting the environment than older generations, especially because of school subjects such as science and citizenship. Talking to our family and other adults can actually help maximise our chances of changing behaviour. Last year, one of my science projects was to go over to the local primary school and teach the first graders about easy, simple things they can do at home to help protect the environment. It was really cool, for us and for them. Sharing views and ideas can help us find solutions. I really believe that as long as young people work together, we can really turn things around.
Natasha.
Of course we are. After all, we are the ones that will have to go on living on this planet. We care and we get involved. It's obvious that something needs to be done. I mean, the environmental problems we've been causing are not just going to vanish as if by magic, are they? Words are not enough, and we all know it. We need to start making sensible shopping choices and disposing of our waste in responsible ways. But I think the most important thing is that this generation is raising its voice to make sure everyone realizes what's happening, whether that's enough to reverse the situation or not. Well, to be honest, I don't really know.
Now check your answers. That is the end of the listening of Text 1. Text 2. You will hear a debate about climate change. For items 2.1 to 2.7, choose the correct option, A, B, or C. On your answer sheet, write only the numbers and the letters. You have 1 minute to read the items. Now listen. Welcome to today's hot topic, climate change. Please welcome Professors Jonathan Evergreen and Eve Thompson.
Good afternoon. Hello, good afternoon.
There has been a lot of talk about the way the media have been covering the issue of global warming. Most people claim there has been a sort of climate silence because the media have been protecting countries whose way of living depends on industry. This silence is clearly broken on social media, where people openly spread the word about what is going on. Dr. Evergreen, one of the questions that stands out from these discussions is, who should we hold responsible for climate change?
Well, even though it's a controversial issue, the truth is that the rich industrialized nations, which started the Industrial Revolution and the emission of CO2 gases, are particularly responsible for global warming.
Not quite, Professor Evergreen. We have to remember that industrialized countries were completely unaware of the consequences of their emissions when they first started industrialization back in the 1700s. This knowledge only began to emerge after the 70s. That means 50 years ago.
Does that mean they're less responsible, Professor Evergreen?
Of course not. How can you possibly compare the responsibility of industrialized countries to that of small islands that are shrinking because of the rising sea levels? How can this be their fault?
That just misses the point. For me, it's all quite obvious. There is no use in discussing this. The point is, global warming is a tremendously important and global problem with a major impact. And every country needs to put its resources effectively and fully behind resolving the crisis.
Do you think, Professor Evergreen, that industrialized countries are now trying to reverse the impact of their carbon emissions?
Not really. New Yorkers, for example, have a higher carbon footprint than millions of people living in the least industrialized countries. I think most New Yorkers are not even aware of it, and actually prefer to think other countries are to blame for the climate issue and refuse to come up with plans involving any changes in their way of life.
But you can't deny developing countries now pollute much more because of their catastrophic population growth. History tells us that in the past, moderate population growth was beneficial as it stimulated demand and encouraged innovation. But the rapid and unprecedented population growth of developing countries nowadays implies the development of, for example, complex public health and transport systems. These are a tremendous burden on the environment.
What is best for planet Earth, then? Should industrialized countries have a greater obligation to fight global warming?
I think the most important and fair approach is for the world to come together to solve the problem.
Yes. It must be a joint effort. But the wealth of industrialized countries must now be used to combat the problem they started. Developing countries use almost all of their resources on subsistence living, while industrialized countries spend much of their resources on luxury and excesses.
And what can we, as individual citizens, do to minimize the problem, Professor Evergreen?
Well, there are many simple things we can do, such as unplugging our computers and other electronics when we are not using them, making our diet greener by buying local whenever possible, or taking environmentally friendly public transport to work or school.
Any more ideas, Professor Thompson?
I think Professor Evergreen's ideas are relevant and can easily be put into practice. But I think more drastic measures are fundamental. Stop using cars altogether, eat meat-free meals, and accept that we are all responsible for what is happening, so it is in our hands to change things.
Well, thank you both so much. Listen again. Welcome to today's hot topic, climate change. Please welcome Professors Jonathan Evergreen and Eve Thompson.
Good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
There has been a lot of talk about the way the media have been covering the issue of global warming. Most people claim there has been a sort of climate silence because the media have been protecting countries whose way of living depends on industry. This silence is clearly broken on social media, where people openly spread the word about what is going on. Dr. Evergreen, one of the questions that stands out from these discussions is, who should we hold responsible for climate change?
Well, even though it's a controversial issue, the truth is that the rich industrialised nations, which started the Industrial Revolution and the emission of CO2 gases, are particularly responsible for global warming.
Not quite, Professor Evergreen. We have to remember that industrialised countries were completely unaware of the consequences of their emissions when they first started industrialisation back in the 1700s. This knowledge only began to emerge after the 70s. That means 50 years ago.
Does that mean they're less responsible, Professor Evergreen?
Of course not. How can you possibly compare the responsibility of industrialised countries to that of small islands that are shrinking because of the rising sea levels? How can this be their fault?
That just misses the point. For me, it's all quite obvious. There is no use in discussing this. The point is, global warming is a tremendously important and global problem with a major impact, and every country needs to put its resources effectively and fully behind resolving the crisis.
Do you think, Professor Evergreen, that industrialised countries are now trying to reverse the impact of their carbon emissions?
Not really. New Yorkers, for example, have a higher carbon footprint than millions of people living in the least industrialised countries. I think most New Yorkers are not even aware of it and actually prefer to think other countries are to blame for the climate issue and refuse to come up with plans involving any changes in their way of life.
But you can't deny developing countries now pollute much more because of their catastrophic population growth. History tells us that in the past, moderate population growth was beneficial as it stimulated demand and encouraged innovation. But the rapid and unprecedented population growth of developing countries nowadays implies the development of, for example, complex public health and transport systems. These are a tremendous burden on the environment.
What is best for planet Earth, then? Should industrialized countries have a greater obligation to fight global warming?
I think the most important and fair approach is for the world to come together to solve the problem.
Yes, it must be a joint effort. But the wealth of industrialized countries must now be used to combat the problem they started. Developing countries use almost all of their resources on subsistence living, while industrialized countries spend much of their resources on luxury and excesses.
And what can we, as individual citizens, do to minimize the problem, Professor Evergreen?
Well, there are many simple things we can do, such as unplugging our computers and other electronics when we are not using them, making our diet greener by buying local whenever possible, or taking environmentally friendly public transport to work or school.
Any more ideas, Professor Thompson?
I think Professor Evergreen's ideas are relevant and can easily be put into practice. But I think more drastic measures are fundamental. Stop using cars altogether, eat meat-free meals, and accept that we are all responsible for what is happening, so it is in our hands to change things.
Well, thank you both so much. Now check your answers. That is the end of the listening of text 2. That is the end of part A.